And I founded a little a grassroots organization to explore the reuse of this building because I'd like to see it come back. It's got a beautiful old facade with the what I believe are the original lamps. There's a resident historian that's attached to this that's done a significant amount of historical research on the particularly the orchestra that was housed in that building.
Orchestra.
There was an orchestra, Frank Clotier, and the Victorians, otherwise known as Frank Clotier, and the Victoria Cafe Orchestra, and they landed a spot on the Anthology of America Folk Music, which was originally done in 1952, and this is something else the historian knows a considerable amount about. That one of the only, I think the only group among, I believe, 80... Mm-hmm. There are 84 recordings from the north was Frank Clotier and the Victoria Cafe Orchestra. And this was also believed to be one of the first commercial, Twin Cities commercial recordings.
Okay, all of this in a relatively small building.
Correct.
That started life as a movie house, movie theater.
Correct.
You need photographs. You need period photographs, preferably taken inside. To help you reconstruct this thing, rehabilitate it, bring it back to its former glory. Do you have any such photographs?
Well, this, again, was provided by the...
We're looking at a photograph in the brochure you've got here. It's an interior photo with some young ladies.
Yes, correct. Now, this photograph was provided by the granddaughter of Mo Thompson. Mo Thompson owned the building as the Victoria Cafe. She believes this was taken inside the cafe. That's kind of up for debate, I suppose. This was provided to me by the historian. However, the picture itself, it's got a series of about four dancing girls, three of whom are sitting on top of the piano that Mo Thompson is sitting at. Mo Thompson was a published songwriter,
All right, so you're trying to pull together all the pieces you can and hoping that we can just try to reproduce this thing as best we can. What is the status of it now, Keith? What are the prospects of getting the Victoria Theater back into operation like the Heights is?
Well, it's after my efforts, they continue. The neighborhood really got involved. They have just recently been awarded funds from Springboard for the Arts. They've got a program called Irrigate. For the purchase agreement and also for business and development.
What kind of money?
Planning.
What's the big number it would take to get this thing, renovated and up and running?
Well, I think it's a reasonable amount, but I would say possibly less than $1 million. Reasonably, a little over $1 million.
Yep.
Considerably less. Let me just say, considerably less than the Hollywood Theater. I originally looked at the Hollywood Theater.
We're going to bring Bob DeFlores in to talk about that, too. The Hollywood Theater, Bob?
Yeah, the Hollywood Theater, which is actually a charming neighborhood theater again.
Minneapolis?
Up near the Heights, not too far from the Heights.
Okay.
It's on Johnson Street. But I did some showings to help raise money up in that area. I did some movie programs to generate some income to save the theater. And it's still boarded up, and it needs a lot of work. I think it needs about $1 million worth of work for the ceiling alone. But it's a charming theater if it was fixed up. And at one point in time, I thought somebody was interested in the theater and refurbishing it for a vaudeville house to have acts come in and then maybe movies also. But I'm hoping that that does happen at some time. But at least we saved it from the wrecking ball.
Well, kind of like Field of Dreams, if you build it or rehabilitate it, they will come, as we have seen with the Heights Theater, Bob. That's
definitely
a success, isn't it?
That's
I'm there often enough to know that.
That's a big success,
Which
a lot of work has gone into preserving the theater and to see people coming up to support the theater to keep it going.
Yep.
That's a very important part of it, too.
So, Keith, you're optimistic, are you? You can get this done with the help of others and...
Very. There's been a groundswell of support from the neighborhood. They're really helping drive this now.
Excellent. This is got on University Avenue near Lexington. You've got light rail coming through there next year, I guess.
There'll be a station area within steps of the front doors of this theater.
You see that as really good news for this?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. Have merchants been driven away by the construction, and is there a process of bringing them back, or is the neighborhood getting settled down again after all the light light rail.
Oh, I think it took its toll on lot of businesses.
I do too.
It's, you know,
movie theater might help bring people back down there.
I think I'm optimistic that this is the kind of movie theaters do tend to have an effect on development, and particularly in the very immediate area. And I think this neighborhood in particular is ripe for this very kind of thing. And I would love to see old film occupying some of the programming.
So would lots of people, including me, and we wish you the very best on this. Keith, thank you for coming down today, and best of luck with this effort. Keep at it. Do not be discouraged.
Thank you, Steve.
Money isn't everything, but it's everything, Keith.
Thank
right.
you.
Right. Thank you. Well, Bob, that does sound optimistic, and I'm glad we're got the ball rolling on that one. Thanks to Keith and others,
yes.
And I know you're helping. And again, where do you... Bob DeFlores, you help documentaries we see on PBS all over the place. You have supplied footage.
Right.
How do you come by this obscure stuff that nobody else has without giving away any trade secrets?
Well, you know, when I was art director for LRB Architects, we had what is known as a Watts line, where you could call all over the United
Wide
States.
Wide area telephone service. We had that at KSTP. We used it a lot because it was
And if you were an employee, I was art director, I could go up at night and call all over the country.
And you did.
And so like a detective, you get leads and you call. Believe it or not, I will tell the audience something of interest. Everybody thinks that a lot of movies are actually found out in Hollywood. There are movies found in Hollywood or near Hollywood. But the majority of rare movies are found either overseas or in New York on the East Coast. You have people in New York that collect everything. They'll collect Civil War buttons on a jacket. And so a lot of your, what I call the B product films, you know, Principal Pictures, Sono Art Worldwide, you know, PRC, all these secondary studios, a lot of their films have deteriorated over the years, and thanks to Turner Classic Movies, some of them are coming back, like the Bowery Boys. And those were the kind of films I grew up with in the theaters. But I've met people in practically every state. There's a fella up in near Syracuse, New York, that has all the old newsreels. He's collected newsreels since he was a teenager. And so I know him, okay? Then you find another guy that collects musical shorts. And then, you know, so you have this network and you're hunting for certain films. And eventually, like Song of My Heart, which John helped me on, we showed it at the Grandview Theater. That took 10 years to find.
Wow.
Through phone calls. Through
you are
writing
the Sherlock
people.
Holmes of film.
Well,
aren't you? You track stuff down.
Yeah. And there's very little information to go on today. Right. You know, it used to be you'd call the studio, they'd hand you stills and posters and repressed books and everything. Now,
here, kid, take it, get out of here.
Now you have to go to the library, you got to look online, you got to piece everything together to find out something.
Yeah. Well, you've had phenomenal success because you're dogged, you're a great researcher, you've done it. And some of the major movie houses, some of the studios, I mean, they were literally throwing prints away of major movies, weren't they just tossing them out?
Like one of the things I tell the story is that when I was young and I read this newspaper article, the paper was not of that day that I was reading it. It was paper that was done, I think, about, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 years before I mentioned this. But anyway, there was a picture in the paper of Universal Pictures burning 400 films from the silent era. They took all the nitrate films out into a vacant lot and lit a match, thinking they had no future value at all. And so finally, many years later, like in the generation we're living in, they are looking for all these movies that they once burned. Where are they found? A lot of them are found over in France, Czechoslovakia, different countries, and they're shipped back here and then remastered and restored. So when I saw that, that concerned me because I thought, well, gee, if they're burning all these silent movies, which were nitrate prints, why they don't have any backup prints or anything, and so they must not think. Now, some of the movies that were in that burning were like Hunchback of Notre Dame, with Lon Chaney, and Phantom of the Opera, and stuff like that.
How could they do that?
Well, at that time, it cost a lot of money to ensure nitrate films, and then they were also could deteriorate, and they were like a time bomb.
I see.
So their idea was, well, heck, we've shown them, we've made some money off them, let's just take them out and dump them. So a lot of our old films, like Short Subjects that we are now seeing again, which were actually an integral part of the movie-going experience through the 20s, 30s, 40s, all the way up into the 50s, are being restored now and brought back, mm-hmm. you know.
Hallelujah. So,
yeah.
Thank goodness. Thanks to efforts of people like you, Robert. Bob DeFloris, our guest today, a man who has really made a name for himself, and deservedly so, as a film historian, preservationist, the whole ball of wax, keeping us... well up and, you know, keeping those valuable pieces of film that are so much a part of our history, our culture, our society. It's really a labor of love for you, but it's dogged work. I mean, I know you're at it every day. You never let up. You have to. Just taking a look here, every time you're on the show, I like to remind people how many Hollywood stars, how many big names came out of Minnesota.
Well, in the book... which I helped on, actually. I got to give myself a little plug.
The title?
But anyway, in Minnesotans in the movies, and Rolf Canton was a friend of mine.
Right.
And he had the idea. I always was talking to him. They should be doing an exhibit at the History Center on Minnesotans in the movies.
Amen.
They should be doing...
Amen. I'm going to talk to them about that.
you know, a book to yep. show how many great actors from the past came out. Now, in this book... there's about 100 or a little over 100,
mm-hmm.
but there's far more, you know, actors that are beyond the 100 that came out of Minnesota. And some of the just real quick ones from the past, if you want to go ahead.
Sure, Bob, you know them. Lonnie, right. You can comment if you want. Lonnie Anderson, St. Paul.
Sure.
Yep. She starred in Jane Mansfield's story. Andrews Sisters. They were in films as well as Sisters.
Right.
Of course, we know who they are. Lou Ayres,
yes.
All Quiet on the Western right. Front. He was from Minneapolis.
Right.
And the Arness Brothers.
Right.
Arness Brothers.
Yep. James Arness
and Peter Graves.
Peter Graves,
from Minneapolis, went to Southwest High School. Richard Carlson.
Richard Carlson.
Three Lives.
Sure.
Yep. Arlene Dahl. From Minneapolis. Bill Demarest.
William Demarest.
Somebody named Frances Ethel Gum from...
Judy Garland.
Judy Garland from up there. Tippi Hedren. Yep. I think she was from New Ulm, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Jessica Lange in more recent years.
Sure.
Cloquet.
Mm-hmm.
E.G. Marshall.
Owatonna.
Right, Owatonna. Mm-hmm. He starred in The Defenders. Mm-hmm. Noel Neal. Anybody remember that?
Oh, sure.
You do?
Superman. Yeah.
Lois Lane in Superman. Noel's name is Neal from Minneapolis. Jane Russell.
Passed away not too long ago.
From Bemidji. Winona Ryder.
Mm-hmm.
Guess where she came from?
Winona.
Yeah. Lily St. Cyr, Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Richard Widmark.
Sunrise.
And Gig Young.
That's just a few.
You're right. Robert Vaughn.
Robert Vaughn.
Thank you, Mr. Vaughn. Indeed. And interesting, Gail Sondergaard.
Oh, yes.
Tell us the backstory on this one.
Oh,
people probably don't know her.
Gail Sondergaard is, to me, the queen of... she played a lot of, I'm not going to say sinister roles, you know, where like Sherlock Holmes and the Spider-Woman, you know, mm-hmm. those kind of movies that she just stole the scene. In fact, we showed some films up at the Heights, and she was in a few.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody applauded her after they just saw her face.
Sure.
She didn't need to say anything.
She was the first choice for The Wicked Witch of the West.
Right. Uh-huh.
Right? And The Wizard of Oz.
Right. Definitely.
And you got to know the lady who was cast.
That's a story in itself, actually. We'll do that next time around.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this has been an absolute blast, as usual. Love talking about the movies. People love going to the movies. And efforts are underway to rehabilitate some old movie houses from yesteryear, get them back up and running so all of us can go and enjoy the kind of nights we're having at the Heights Theater in Columbia Heights. What a great joy. Bob DeFloris, thank you so much for all you do. John Vaughn, thank you for sharing your Hollywood stories. You cop on General Hospital, you. Huh? Yep, those are great memories. And Keith Johnson for taking a leading role in trying to get that theater, the old Victoria Theater, up and going again. We wish you the very best on that, too.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Keith, for coming by. Thank you all. We'll take a break here. We're going to bring in Pamela York from the Minnesota Department of Health right after this.
Get behind the wheel of a new vehicle from River Valley Ford in Baldwin. The Ford Explorer has room for seven with plenty of power under the hood to pull the boat or camper. Road trips are more fun with the unmatched comfort of the Ford Edge. For the daily drive to work, you can't go wrong with the Ford Fusion, Focus, or Fiesta. We've got them all right here at River Valley Ford. Shop, compare, and find out why so many of your friends and neighbors choose River Valley Ford in Baldwin.
River Valley Ford.
Brad from Seasons Tavern in North Hudson is so modest, he won't tell you he has the best walleye, ribs, and Bloody Marys in town. But his customers will. Vlad from Milwaukee says Walleye Cakes Benedict, prepared perfectly with nice, light, crispy cakes of walleye goodness, topped with eggs poached to the point of divinity. I was in heaven. Come on down to Seasons Tavern in Hudson and taste heaven for yourself.
Good food and good times are just minutes away, folks, so come on down to Seasons Tavern today.
The 1920s were a golden age for baseball and custom-tailored clothing. That golden age is back at Jaime's Haberdashery in St. Paul. Jaime's Haberdashery helps men look and feel their best with high-quality clothing cut and styled just for them. Make each visit uniquely yours with hats, suits, casual wear, and accessories. Visit their barbershop for a hot lather shave. It's the golden age again at Jaime's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street in downtown St. Paul. Online at Jaime's.com.
To really experience a book, meet the author. I'm Stan Turner for Valley Bookseller in downtown Stillwater. Every month, Valley Bookseller's calendar is loaded with events featuring both local and national authors. Visit valleybookseller.com and click the events calendar for a complete list. Choose from monthly events like the Totally Criminal Cocktail Hour or special presentations with authors on tour. Meet your favorite author at Valley Bookseller. Great books, great people. 217 North Main in Stillwater.
We'll jump right in here. It's 79 degrees under cloudy skies. Might top out around 86 degrees today, so might break a sweat after all today. Well, it's summer after all, and, well, we have lots of things to talk about with Pam York of the Minnesota Department of Health, as always. And, you know, new drugs, treatments, where do you go to make sure they're the right thing? They're good, they're actually going to do us some good.
There's so much information coming out. It's really overwhelming, and in terms of both what we see as consumers and what healthcare providers see, and as you know, there's money behind all of this, whether it's the new book that came out or, you know, what you're seeing promoted at the retail stores or whatever. And it is all designed to make money. So when you are looking at what is a good thing for me to do or what should I consider, you have to keep that in mind when you're looking at the information. Because most of this information is advertising, whether it's advertising to professionals or whether it's advertising to consumers. And it's heavy on hype, and it's pretty thin on the facts. So we have direct-to-consumer advertising, which is that information that comes from drug companies that advertises directly to you. You've seen the ones for the arthritis drugs with the woman bounding across the field of flowers and all of those sorts of things. And it has, you know, it is more hype, and the problem is with knowing, well, really, okay, so what is that going to do for me or not going to do for me? And you need to take all of that with a grain of salt. It probably is not the best way to find out about new prescription drugs. Your healthcare professional needs to be your key advisor in this and in making choices, both for the prescription medications, those that they write for you, as well as for the over-the-counter. And we've talked before about how we see things that were previously offered only by prescription that now you can buy over the counter as well. And you need to rely on your healthcare professionals' advice in terms of which of those are right for you. Is the level of the drug that's in the over-the-counter version the right amount for you, or should you be using a prescription level, and all of those sorts of considerations? Then they all need to fit together. So you need to not be counteracting some of the effects of the prescription medications you may be taking by what you might be taking over the counter. Or we've talked particularly about some of those that all have blood thinning effects, and if you're taking prescription medications that prevent blood clotting, and then on top of that you're adding herbal or other over-the-counter remedies that do that, you can get into trouble with that. So you really want to be sure that you tell your healthcare provider about everything that you're doing so that it can all be matched and meshed and you aren't getting too much of one thing and not enough another. Good example we had this past week. There's research that came out about fish oil and that people who are men who are taking large amounts of fish oil seem to have more risk of prostate cancer. Now, this is preliminary information. It is this associative sort of research that we've talked about before, but it is another one of those red flags that reminds us that more is not necessarily better, and some of these things are not appropriate for everyone, and you really need to evaluate that with your healthcare provider. Now, most people take fish oil in order to prevent heart disease, and we have many, many more cases of heart disease than we do of prostate cancer. But if you happen to have a strong family history of prostate cancer or of heart disease, the decision is different than if you're in a different category. So you really need to talk that through with your healthcare provider. Many people get very frustrated with their healthcare providers because they're not as enthusiastic about this new and greatest thing that you have just discovered. And in some cases, it's very difficult to keep up with all of this information. It is a full-time job. And as one who tries to keep up with more of it rather than less, I can tell you it is very difficult for healthcare providers to do that. It's also very challenging for them to explain why some of these things are just totally bogus and why they make no sense and why they're not right for you. So, give the healthcare provider a break here. It also is their job to be cautious. They should be giving you treatments that have been well-researched, that have been vetted, that have been determined to be the standard of practice, not the fly-by-night stuff. So sometimes as consumers, we're grasping at any possibility. We'd like to find a cure for things that don't have a cure. We'd like to find a treatment that you can't treat very well. And so we go after things that hoping for a miracle when there really are no silver bullets. So where do you find good information other than your healthcare provider? There are three types of organizations. First of all, government agencies. We have FDA and CDC and NIH. We'll talk a bit in a minute. Mm-hmm. Health professional organizations, things like the American Medical Association, the Nurses Association, the orthopedic surgeons, the respiratory therapists, all of those folks have really good information on their websites as well. And a lot of this stuff you really can access most easily by website, so make friends with your public librarian. The folks in the reference department will be more than happy to help you. Even if you are some computer savvy, they can help you sort through the information. They're very useful people to make your best friends. Voluntary health organizations is the third category. That's things like the Heart Association, Cancer Society, Arthritis Foundation, Diabetes Association, and there's one for just about every disease and condition out there. You have to be careful. Some of them are bona fide good organizations. Some of them are just ways to raise money that doesn't necessarily go for what you want it to go for. So you want to look for the ones that have scientific advisors from well-known universities who work with government agencies like CDC and NIH. Most of them have many ways to get information. You have 1-800 toll-free numbers. You have websites. Many of them have written information. They'll have community forums talking about various topics. So those are really helpful for you to gather that information. The federal government then, FDA, Food and Drug Administration, these are the people that regulate drugs, www.fda.gov, easy to remember. This is also where you can report problems, and they count on you to tell them when things are not working right. Do not worry about whether that's actually what it is. They accumulate this from people across the country, and it really helps them find out where the problems are. NIH, National Institutes of Health, this is all the big research agencies, www.nih.gov. There's a bunch of them. You can find the right one, CDC, wwcdc.gov, and Minnesota and Wisconsin, www.mn.gov to get to Minnesota agencies, www.wisconsinwrittenout.gov to get to the Wisconsin agencies. We link to local resources. Great opportunity.
Thank you, Pam. Next week, real fast.
Phytochemicals, phytonutrients, superfoods, what's hype, what's real, what you care about.
Thank you.
This is where your music and memories live. Club 1220.
KLBB.
Stillwater, Minneapolis, St. Paul.